According to the Pew Research Organization, there are 23 religions or faith systems that have over 600,000 people. There are 8 billion people on the planet, and 7 billion have bought into one faith system or another. Who's got it right and who's got it wrong?
You're listening
to the Thinking Matters podcast.
Conversations
at the intersection of
faith,
culture,
and reason.
Today, I'm happy to be joined by Sam Treadwell. Sam, it's good to have you.
Good to be here, mate.
Yeah. Sam is a recently retired from a position in corporate logistics with a large multinational biotechnology company that was in Asia-Pacific region, but based in New Zealand. And I'm not real familiar with Sam. So, Sam, can you just share a little bit about yourself, your family, your faith journey?
Yeah, sure. So I was brought up Roman Catholic, so I knew who God was from a very point. And I was one of those really nerd kids, even before nerd was a thing. So if you caught up with me if you caught up with the average 10-year-old and said, you know, what would you like to be when you grow up? Probably most Kiwi 10-year-olds back in my day would have said, oh, they want to be a fireman and an astronaut and an All Black. But if he caught up with me, I would have said, I wanted to be a paleontologist, someone who dug around.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Most people would, what?
That's rare, random.
Yeah, probably thankfully for me, by the time I grew up and left high school, I'd grown out of that. But I did shoot off to university and do a bioprocess engineering degree. And by the time I came out of university, I was very much an atheist. I didn't think atheism was correct. I knew beyond doubt that science had disproven God. And was it that I was into dinosaurs and evolution when I was a little kid? Maybe that helped. But back in the 70s, it really was the thing that science had disproven God. That was probably me until my 30s. And then in my 30s, my wife asked me if I would like to go to an alpha course. And probably
it's all alpha.
Yeah, good old alpha, yeah. So probably to her huge surprise, I said yes. And I don't know why. If you ask me, it's kind of like I knew there was no God, but maybe there was. And so in my arrogance, I guess you could say, in one shot, Eddie took it. So I was reading through the book of John during the course, and I gave my life to Christ and became a Christian. So then things were quite messy for me, because in my heart, Christian, in my head, evolution hadn't sorted everything out?
Right.
But that's what it stayed with me for several decades. And then in my 50s, I finally plucked up the courage to try and dip my toe in that very deep water that is the debates between creationism and evolution.
Right.
And to see if I couldn't get my head around that. And that man, did I grab a tiger by the tail? Because for every one question you get answered, there's another 3, 4, 5 coming the back end of that. And it took me a decade to finally get my to where I felt like I was had my head around the whole topic. But that journey turns out to be something quite stunning. You were taken to the outer edges of the universe, to the beginning of time, down to subatomic particles. And there are moments along that journey that I would just push my chair back from the desk and go, what is that about?
What have you embarked on, huh?
Well, but just the information you get is just stunning, just overwhelming, like the fine tuning of the universe.
Right.
So when I had my head around that, I and my own faith had grown a lot during that period of time. So I was kind of looking for my next challenge. And I didn't have to wait too long for that, because by then my wife and I had moved up to Singapore. I'd taken over an Asia Pacific job. So I was looking after several countries, and I had to pop in and out of Asian countries a lot. And I found the spiritual landscape up in Asia incredibly different to what it is in New Zealand.
How so? More open or not open or what?
Yeah, so here's my take on it, right? So if you ask me to describe the spiritual landscape of New Zealand, I'd say, look, you got Christianity, a minority. I think the stats say somewhere around 10%. When I was growing up, you did have the other religions here in New Zealand, Hinduism, Buddhism, but I didn't bounce into them too much. I would have said that the majority of Kiwis were in that agnostic, atheist camp. Yeah. And then I get to Asia, and there are some Asian countries that have made a concerted effort to become atheists, like China. Yeah. And I did not pick up a strong spiritual vibe in Japan, but a lot of the other countries, even Singapore, with its modern worldview, it feels like the only atheists that you get around the place are the expats kicking around.
What? As
most people have bought into one faith system or another. And the faith systems that they've got there are not just the big four. Because you've got Shinto in Japan, Amuism in Korea, Kaldai in Vietnam. And so I set about taking a look at all of them. Why not? So it was another long, multi-year journey to dig into, according to the Pew Research Organization, there are 23 religions or faith systems that have over 600,000 people in them. And a lot of those are seated in Asia. So I took a look at them all. You know, you've probably come across Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective.
Yep, highly successful. Mm-hmm.
Seek first to understand before being understood. So I thought I'd take a look at them. Could I dig into it? Could you get to a spot where you could say, this is what is truth and this is what is counterfeit in any faith system? Like, if you will, a set of bifocal glasses, and you can look at any religion and see whether or not it's on track or not. So another big beauty for me, when I felt like I had that just about sorted out, my wife and I came back from Asia to live back in New Zealand, and we arrived just before COVID did, coincidentally. And we hooked up with a large church here in Tauranga, and they shouted me a coffee and said, do you know any ways that you might want to help in the church? You know, I've been on a really interesting journey that has been really helped my own faith. And they're big first order questions. How did the universe get here? There are 8 billion people on the planet, and 7 billion have bought into one faith system or another. Who's got it right and who's got it wrong? Big questions. And I found the answers to these, or the journey of finding these answers, to be really encouraging for my own faith. And maybe that might be of encouragement to others. So I started off doing some science. I started off doing some courses. I did one on the science, faith, interface, and then understanding world religions, and then general apologetics. And I caught the eye of the Thinking Matters team. It's quite a funny little aside there. Thinking Matters is based in Tauranga.
Right.
Yeah. And so I rocked in to Little Tauranga and start doing science, faith, and understanding world religions courses. And then in the heart of Thinking Matters, and they didn't even write, was is their church. Half of the board go along to the church.
That's funny. Who is this guy? He didn't get our authorization or permission.
So anyway, I was about to retire, and we thought, you know, hey, if I kind of did a best of, if I took some from here and some from there, and built an apologetics 101 course, it could be used for people who are just wanting to get some of the basics sorted along those lines. You know, I can take that to towns around New Zealand, pop into wherever it might be needed.
Yeah, I've seen the curriculum for your regional seminars. Amongst all the topics, you got is Christian, no, not, Can All Religions Lead to God? Is that that unit where you kind of explore the different faiths and whatnot among the many units you do?
What we actually, so just to talk a little bit about the format of the course. So
yeah,
it's built on three parts. The first
For those of people that don't know, Sam goes around the different various regions of New Zealand and does a Friday night, all day Saturday seminar. So, and it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 10 or 12 modules in it, right?
Yeah.
All right, carry on.
In some topics. So what we do, we start off on the Friday night and we take a look at science that points to God. So we're going to go, to the start of the universe, find out that it had a beginning, and we're going to explore two different arguments for God. The first is the Kalam cosmological argument, and then the second reaches into the book of the Return of the God Hypothesis by Dr. Stephen Meyer. And really, we say, look, the universe had a beginning, and it is fine-tuned to an incredible, incredible degree. And these things have theistic implications.
Right.
We're there, we take a look at evolution. So we do have a look at Darwin's theory of evolution, but also we dig a bit deeper into chemical evolution as well, origin of the first cell. So that's on the Friday night. On the Saturday morning, we change tack, and that Friday night says, yep, it is very reasonable to put your faith in the Judeo-Christian God from a science point of view. Yeah. And there's a lot of science on the Friday.
I guess. And how'd you turn the corner from being there is a God from deism to theism to Christianity? Where, how did you nuance that?
Yes.
Strictly from a science point of view.
Yes, the science will only take you so far.
Yeah.
In Meyer's book, he puts up five different worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, of these worldviews, if you look at the three key pieces of science, the universe had a beginning, the universe is fine-tuned, and there is genetic information that's been inserted into the world as we go along. If you look at the different worldviews that you have, if you look at pantheism, for example, the Eastern religions that say the universe and God are one. Yeah. There's nothing outside of that universe. Yeah. So it discounts it. It might be capable of making the world and us, but it's not outside of the universe. So therefore, it doesn't explain how the universe got here. You with me? Yep. Yeah. So with science, you can go so far. You can say that we are looking for a causal agent that sits outside of the universe, capable of making the universe and fine-tuning it. And your deistic God can sit in that boat as well. Deism is the watchmaker God, the God that creates the universe and then is hands off from then on. Think of it as the perfect pool player. Smacks the white ball into the triangle of cue ball of balls and they all go into the pockets without the guy going back to the table. Yep. Yeah. When you include the infusions of genetic material after the start of time, then you're also got a God that's involved after the start of time, and that's a theistic God.
Okay.
Yeah. So what science can do is...
Is that your differentiation between deism and theism? I thought theism was more a God that revealed himself and can be known and we can have a relationship with him. Am I gone too far with that?
Yeah. That is absolutely true and true for me. I personally have experienced that. But if you're just looking at science... And you want how far science can go, because science can only work inside of what can be shown to be, or what can be scientifically advanced.
Yes.
It's very hard to advance science in a supernatural sense.
Yeah. Well, I was just going off of deism is the master pool player with the initial shot and Elvis leaves the building versus God infused this earth with genetic information. And you then skipped into, well, that's the theistic God. And I just never heard that differentiation. I always just assumed theistic gods are ones that have made themselves known, such as through the Bible or whatever. So just a different spin I had not heard, Sam.
Yeah. So I'm drawing directly from Myers-Vock.
Okay.
Yep. But are we okay with that? Can you? So the logic I've got there is that I'm looking at science. How far can science take us? Science can say there is a God that created the universe, and that could be deistic. But then that God has done some stuff after that, infused genetic material. So from a scientific point of view, you could say, yep, that is God acting after the start, and so that falls in line with theism. So that's what we do on the Friday night. On the Saturday morning, we change tack totally. And we say, well, right, okay, when you think about it, the God that puts genetic material in after the start of time, that could be Allah.
Yes.
Yeah, or it could be Jehovah's Witness. Or you've got faiths like the Baha'i faith and Khao Dai in Vietnam that say there's a supreme being who has made himself known through Buddha and through Jesus Christ and through Allah and through, who say that all religions can lead to God. This comes back to that question you were asking me before, right? So how do you, science can only say, yes, this causal agent has stuck his finger in the pie since the universe began. But how do you differentiate which of the causal agents is correct? So to do that on a Saturday morning, we change tack totally, and we dig into the prophecy that there is in the Bible. And according to J. Barton Payne's Encyclopedia of Bible Prophecy, there are 8,352 prophecies in the...
I've never heard that figure. That's a large number.
Covering 1,817 different subtopics or topics, if you will. So we dig into that. Can the Bible validate itself? Can it show to us that it is the correct, that the correct causal agent is
a divine origin type of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't go through 8,300.
No. What are some of your biggies? Tyre and Sidon, Isaiah, the suffering Messiah? I mean, some of those?
Yes. Yeah. So we take a look at a few that are really quite that are really quite qualitatively
pronounced. Yeah. Powerful. Yeah.
So the naming of Cyrus. So in Isaiah, so here's Isaiah. He's a prophet. He's around 700 BC. And at the time that he's around, the nation of Judah is alive and thriving, and the temple is in place in Jerusalem. And he makes this amazing prophecy. He mentions a person by name, Cyrus, and he says, Cyrus will allow my people to go back and rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. And the temple is standing. And then 150 years or so later, Jerusalem and Judah has been taken over by the Babylonians. The Jewish people, the Jews, have been taken away to Babylon, and they are allowed by the emperor, I think he called it, or by the ruler, Cyrus, to go back and build the walls of Jerusalem.
And do you ever get any pushback? Well, how do you know that prophecy was done pre-Cyrus versus post, you know, anachronistically?
Yes, we cover that. So the way that you cover that is through the Septuagint. So the Septuagint, for those who don't know what the Septuagint are, it's the version of the Old Testament, or if you were Jewish, the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, that was translated from Aramaic and from Hebrew into Greek at 270 BC, because that area of the world was covered by Greek-speaking emperors, the Seleucid and the Ptolemaic empires. Yeah, so we know that the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, was completed, canonized by about 450 BC. You had Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther.
Yeah.
And then, so we know it was finished then. And in 270 BC, it was translated into Greek. That, when you were sitting in a church and the pastors are up the front and they say, and in the Greek, it is this word. Eh? Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're drawing on
Mr. Intelligent.
Yeah.
So when anyone, because that is an argument that people say.
No, but still, that's still 270 BC, and the events you're talking about with Cyrus and stuff are still much before that, right?
But what it does do is that everything that Jesus did was had to be done after the Septuagint, right? So, and we do go through quite a number of the prophecies that are about Jesus as being Messiah.
Yeah. Okay.
And also you would say that was one of the reasons why Isaiah was accepted as a prophet. When you look at Deuteronomy, God says through Moses, he says, I will send people along. I will send people. And how will you know they're true? How do you know they're coming from me? Because what they say will come true. So Isaiah makes these prophecies, and his book or scroll is kept. And then when it came true, then the people would know that everything that he said was absolutely correct. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we go through some qualitative prophecies, things like Sots. There's a mathematical one that looks at the 69 weeks of Daniel. It shows how that has been shown to be accurate for when Jesus comes along. We go through some from the book of Daniel about the naming of Greece and how Greece will come along as an empire and take over from the Medo-Persians. And then we go through a number of prophecies about Jesus Christ, and show that he's the Messiah. And at the end of that, we let people have a discussion in their little group so they can hit. Now, because I'm going around, and most of the people that come along to the courses are Christian, you're not pushing back too hard. There are really convinced that is the case anyway. You remember the road to Emmaus? So after Jesus has been crucified, and those two guys are walking along the road, and then they don't realize it, but for Jesus, the resurrected Jesus comes up beside them. How you going, guys? Oh man, have you not heard all the trouble that's happened in Jerusalem? And he spends the rest of the time walking them through passages in the Tanakh, the Old Testament, that point to him. Well, we go through some of those on the Saturday morning. So it's really is a cool part. And I think that you can then say, yep, it is reasonable from the two separate paths to have faith in Jesus Christ as the Messiah. It's not a proof. We still are required to have faith by our God, but it gives you some reasons to have your faith. It's not blind faith.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things you talk about is truth and doubt. Where do you go with that? Like, is it okay to doubt the Bible, doubt, you know, your faith? Where do you go with that, Sam?
Yeah, yeah. So sorry for giving you longer, not direct answers, but
that's all right.
So after we've gone through part one, it is reasonable to have faith in Jesus Christ. Then we have to take a look at some of the big challenges that there are placed at the feet of Christianity. Things like, is your Bible authentic? What about the resurrection? What about pain and suffering? But we start off that section by taking a look at truth and doubt. With the thinking being that if you can get your own house in order, if you can face up to your own doubts and get those sorted out, then you're in a better spot to be able to help others. And yes, all Christians go through, in their walk, they have high patches and low patches, and we all have our doubts. But what I can say honestly, hand on heart, is that I let that issue between evolution and creationism, I let that fester for well over two decades and never did anything about it. I never faced up to my own doubts. And when I did finally face up to my doubts, that's when I found that my own faith grew quite a lot.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a bit, that, you know, God is not afraid of your questions. And if Christianity is not, you know, able to be questioned, it lacks merit. You know, we should be able to question our Christianity and question the Bible. I just spoke with a youth group last night, and I said, we don't know all we are going to know about science. We're still in the dark about things. We don't know all the things we need to know theologically. We can never fully know God. So hold them a little bit loosely and be ready to be challenged on different issues with that. And easier said than done sometimes.
And when you invest the time and effort, you're going to grow out of it.
Yeah.
Now, in personal experience for that.
Yeah. Who is it, Lennox, that says, when you take a sip from the cup of science, you might become an atheist, but when you drink it down to its dregs, it certainly leads you to God.
Yeah, that's what I've found.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in Truth and Doubt, we go through what truth is, and then we're saying, look, you're going to have doubts. Get stuck into them. Face up to them. Have a go at them. And your faith grows. And then once we've done that little part, then we can get into some of the other big challenges. And all of these topics, things like truth, things like doubt, things like the resurrection, things like pain and suffering, Bible authenticity, there are subject matter experts who spent their whole academic life. They've got PhDs, and then they spent their whole working life looking into that aspect of the topic. So why shouldn't we just leverage that and be the recipient of what they've found out? And Christians have been wrestling with some of these topics for 2,000 years. So again, let's just piggyback off the back of what they know.
Yeah, why reinvent the wheel? There's been a lot of more brilliant minds than mine that have studied these things. So let's hear about it. I love listening to debates because you get the best intellects on both sides that are battling it out and challenging each other's ideas and whatnot. When it's a charitable debate, you know, the old four horsemen atheists, I didn't like listening to them, but some of the newer atheists are very charitable.
There are a few who I would call, or Wikipedia describes as anti-theists. So you get on the spectrum, you get theists. Yeah, you get people who have really bought into one
thing right
or another. And you get your agnostics, people who haven't made their mind up. You get your atheists, people who've looked into it and decided that there is no God, there's nothing beyond that we see. And then you get anti-theists, and these are people who go out of their way to attack faith systems of all types, but in particular, Christianity comes in with more than its fair share of attack.
Yeah, for sure. That's like your Christopher Hitchens, how religion poisons everything. That's pretty anti, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think part of the problem for agnostics, for people who are just trying to look at this, is that they see someone has a PhD behind their name and they have a vision of what a scientist is like. And a scientist is someone who is supposed to take a look at the facts that are in front of them.
Yeah, be objective.
To a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get scientists out there with PhDs who are anti-theists, who really have got a worldview in their own mind, and they are attacking religions. And I think it's wise to listen to what they have to say, but just be in your own mind cognizant that they have the narrative is going to be very biased on.
Yeah. But that's a two-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, we can be accused of having a biblical Christian theistic lens on every piece of evidence that comes our way as well, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes. So you should listen to what I have to say too, but you should just keep in mind that I have a bias as well. In the course, we do draw on people like Dr. Paul Davies, who I would say is someone who is quite, tries to be objective. When he sees things that are not, that don't make sense to him from an atheist point of view, from a scientific materialist point of view, he ports that out. So he's good to
Is he a physicist? I don't remember. I've heard the name, and I've heard of debates, but I don't remember what his field is, Paul Davies.
Yeah.
Or is he a biologist?
Quantum mechanics.
Quantum mechanics. Okay. Okay. The strange field. And where do you go with you know, is Christianity anti-progress? What do you mean by that in your seminar?
So let me set the stage for a little bit. Two things. You Christians, you have held sway in the Western world, Western civilization for 2,000 years, and look what a mess the place is in. Just exploit it. Step aside, let someone else have a crack at it. And the other thing is that you will now in the press, you will see the conservative Christians at Europe of American, come from America, right? So the American conservative Christian bloc who are wanting to keep things anti-woke or keep things where they were. So we take a look at that. And where we go with that is we draw on a guy called Reverend Dr. Alvin Schmidt, who has passed away now. But he wrote the book, How Christianity Changed the World. And we take a look at what the world was like before Christianity stepped in about 300 or so AD, where Constantine, the Roman Empire, decriminalized Christianity. And then not long afterwards, it became the state religion for the Roman Empire. And we take a look at what Roman Empire was like back then, and then what Christianity did to improve it. And it did it massively.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you had gladiatorial combat, fighting to the death for entertainment. You had bestiality, was not.
And that
one is right.
Infanticide and poor treatment of women and on it goes.
Yep, that's right. And human rights, when one, between a quarter and a third of the world's population, or your population of slaves, and the master can do whatever he wants with the slave, there aren't too much in the way of labor rights and the like as well. So we see, first off, Christianity has done a lot for the world. A huge amount of progress has come about through Christianity. That's something that's worth keeping in mind. And then once we take a look at, yes, there are some things that have been done wrong in the name of Christianity. Things like the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, and
yeah, which has those things.
Northern Ireland, these sort of things. But if this is Christianity and you reject Christianity because of these few things that are done wrongly in the name of Christianity, then you've thrown out the baby with the bathwater.
Sure.
And then lastly, there are some things that Christians and non-Christians would say should be held back. Like, for example, the pornography epidemic that there are amongst our youth. We might say that that's a step in the wrong direction. And I think there'd be a lot of non-Christians who would say that too.
Yeah, for sure. And I see you save kind of the most hot topic for last, LGBTQ plus Christianity. And I bet you get a lot of, well, I don't know. Do you get a lot of pushback on that? Do you get a lot of grisly questions regarding that? What about that?
Yeah, can I set the stage a little bit for that one? So I leave that to last.
It's for last.
Hoping that I'll get out of the room alive. But when I think about it, all the other topics, mostly it's Christians that come along to the course, and mostly the Christians will all sit on the same side of the fence, the same side of the table on all the topics we approach. But on the LGBTQ plus question, you've got a wide spectrum there, and Christians sit all along that spectrum. There are people who are comfortable, Christians who are comfortable to have gay ministers, and there are Christians who at the other end of the table, other end of that spectrum, if they see this, they jump up on their chair and they're all gays are going to hell. And you got Christians who are everywhere in between. So how do I stop it? Well, really, what we're what the course is about. It's about saying there is reasons to have faith in God. Here are the big challenges to Christianity, and here's what the experts say about those challenges. And then the last part is how to share your faith with gentleness and respect. And in every Christian circle these days, there will be people who sit in that community, in the LGBTQ plus community, in their family, or their work colleagues, or their immediate neighbors, or their friend circle. And so how do they help those people see the truth that is Jesus Christ? And if you approach it from standing on the soapbox and yelling at people, you don't help them to be able to understand
right
the truth that is Jesus Christ. So I start off by saying that I'm not here to try and change your mind about where you sit on that spectrum. I'm just trying to give you some tools and information that might help you to be able to work through this topic with some of your colleagues and family, whānau, who might be in that camp. Yeah, fair enough, I think. So I think that helps set the stage and that takes some of the heat out of the conversation right from the start. And I, you know, a church is, you go along on a Sunday and you're going to get a sermon where a pastor or a vicar or a priest is going to take a passage out of the Bible and they're going to talk to you about that passage. But you're not really getting, I don't believe, you're not getting these topics like LGBTQ lanced enough and discussed enough in our churches. So we're not helping our Christians, we're not equipping our church family with stuff that can help them to navigate through these sort of issues. So this, in a half an hour, you can't do too much on a topic like this.
I'm sure, yeah, difficult.
But you can provide some help. And so what we do in the course, we take some stuff out from a guy called Dr. Preston Sprinkle.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He allows us to see Christianity through someone's eyes from the LGBTQ plus community. We start off with a short video clip from him doing that. And that's to try and help you to, like I said before, to seek to understand before being understood, or to walk a mile in someone else's shoes. And then we layer in on the back of that some information from Tim Keller about his views on how Christians should be approaching this topic.
And so when people leave out of there, are they accusing you of being an alt-right conservative or being a liberal or neither?
Well, I've got my Thinking Matters hat on, so I can't, my own views, my own personal views, I'm more representing what Preston Sprinkle has to say on the topic and what Tim Keller has to say on the topic, which are very balanced views, I think. And they do help it's pitched to try and help Christians to say, look, these people, there are LGBTQ people who were raised in the Christian church and who were really wrestling with this topic themselves and struggled with it. And are hurt. They're really hurt. And they're suffering through this. How do we reach? How do we help them? How do we help those people? We are to serve our neighbors, as Tim Keller says, regardless of who they are, whether they be Islamic or Hindu or gay.
So it sounds like you're not just digging into, is this a sin? Is that a sin? Is this not a sin? But rather, and also, how do we help them? Where do we go from here? Type of a approach. That's right.
Yeah. The whole thing about, like, do you go to hell because you are in a gay relationship? You go to hell, strong words, you go to hell because of the sin that lies underneath that sin. The sin that cuts us off from God for eternity is the sin that we have put ourselves as our Lord and Savior. It's the sin underneath the sin. That's the sin that everybody has to address, whether you're gay or straight or a gambler or an alcoholic or just your typical agnostic who's trying to make ends meet in the world today. You're doing it your own way. You are trying to reconcile yourself. You are trying to get salvation through your own means, through what you are doing. When you let go of that, the way to get salvation is to let go of that and to let God atone for your sins for you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really the at the heart of that LGBTQ plus segment is that's what we're trying to help people with, is to see that that's what needs to be done. Now, if you're gay and you see that, and you see that your only way to be saved is through letting God, who came down to earth as a human, atone for your sins, substitute for you, and make your sacrifice. If you allow him to do that and you become a Christian, then he's going to work on you and all the other things, all your other areas that you need to work on will be worked on, yep. Including your relationship, your gay relationships.
Fair enough. So are you happy with these seminars, the way they're going? Are there any things you're planning to change about them in the future or, you know, do differently? Or are you trying to reproduce yourself, have some other people that can present and do the way you do or what?
Yeah, we do a survey at the end of it. So you rate the course from 1 to 10. Would you recommend it to others? 1 to 10. So we get some quantitative feedback on how the course is going, and that's very encouraging. We have 85% of the people that come scored above 8 out of 10. So we've got a good course. We know that it's hitting the spot. There's a lot of material in the course. It's when people come along, they have to bring their A game with them because we're a lot in.
And as do you. I mean, because you're the sole presenter, right? I mean, you don't present all the time. You're a compiler of information, but that still must be pretty exhausting for you.
Yeah. I don't tend to have too much on the Saturday night afterwards.
I'll bet.
Yeah. But the course I do put together, or I have put together videos from all of the subject matter experts. So I do get lots of breaks. I don't talk for all that time. We have 20 different videos inserted in through the course. You said we're going to change things. We did change it a lot. We've done 7 of the courses now. And from the first one to the 7th one, we've cut out a lot of material to make more time for people to have discussions.
Okay.
And we've changed some of the videos. And so we've got things to where we're comfortable with them. And the survey results tell us that it's a good course. So quite comfortable. The next step is to take it to digital. So we'll be videoing it at the Auckland one. I'm going to go to Auckland in November and do a seminar. It'll be videoed. And then over the summer break, we'll cut and paste that into segments that can be...
Right. So how do you avoid, because these are paid seminars, how do you use the clips and information from others, their videos, without infringing on their copyright?
Yes, yeah, at the back of our booklet, you'll see that all of the information that we've got is from open source, and we acknowledge all of the people that we use.
Fair enough.
That covers us from that.
Good.
Yeah.
So you're going to digitize it, and then it'll be available online wherever. And you'll still do your live sessions after that, your live seminars?
Yeah. So next year, the idea is that for next year, we'll have digitized it and turned it into an online course. So individuals can come online and do it, or you could, as a home group, you could decide to do it. And you'd contact us, and we'd send you out the booklets and you would go through the little segments each week and have your booklets and your discussions, or as an encourager, you could do it too. You would contact us, say you want to do the course, register for it, and we'd send you the booklet, and then you can work your way through it as an individual. Yeah. Then, yeah, in parallel to that, we should still be going out there and doing the courses live as well.
Are there any topics, Sam, or questions that you're hoping I would ask, or you were thinking we would talk about that we haven't before we kind of start to land the plane a bit?
I don't think so.
I think we've kind of covered the main points. I would like to circle back at the heart of the course are these videos. So I would not consider myself to be an expert in any of the topics that we cover, and we cover 18 topics, and it's a general course. Thinking Matters brings in the experts from overseas, and they have them go through the country, and they go and they talk to their topic. I'm trying to do an apologetics 101, an introduction on all of these topics, and to provide, help boost people's faith. I'm not an expert. So what we do is we draw videos from the experts. We take 5 minutes from this video and 3 from that, join them together. That really punched the point home. So I guess that's a good thing. You are hearing from the experts in their own words. I maybe have just offered you a shortcut rather than have to sit through 4,500 of videos.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing, because people don't necessarily have the time or the desire to plow through an hour or 2 hour video of a debate or a topic or whatever, be able to pull out the nuggets. You've done the hard yards for them and just distilled it down. So good.
The good news, bad news thing. The good news is that what has taken me well over 12 years to get my head around, you get in 8 hours. The bad news is, what I've had 12 years to get my head around, you have to get your head around it in 8 hours.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah, good. So one of the things that I always close with is Sam, as a Christian, what waters your soul? You know, what keeps you, your walk with Jesus fresh and vibrant and from just, you know, getting old or tiresome?
Yeah. So that has turned out to be digging into all of these topics. And they're a little bit fringe topics. You know, I don't try to compete with the pastors or what the vicars are doing. I'm more nibbling around the edges at some of these more niche topics, but I find them absolutely fascinating. And there's just so much that you can dig into. And the internet these days has got huge amounts of this information on it, from subject matter experts who PhDs. And
I've been using, you know, AI, ChatGPT and others a lot lately, but there's something to be said for doing the years and the hours of reading and digging, because otherwise you don't even know what to put into the prompt at times, and you don't know what's good data and what, you know, I need to flesh this out a little bit more or that a little bit more. You know, I was just thinking about that as I was speaking to the youth group yesterday. They can Google these things, but without kind of a baseline of knowledge, I think it's tough to really parse what's true, what has a lot of weight, and what's not. I don't know about you, if you found that to be so as well.
Yeah, that's there's a fish hook there, right? So it's got really, really good information on the internet, but it's also got bad information on it too. So how do you discern what's good and what's not? Yeah, and that's perhaps one of the things that the course can offer, is that you walk away with a booklet. And the booklet's got all of the source videos that are used in the course, and what are the books and resources that Thinking Matters would recommend as well. So it's a good place to start. Hopefully you would go along to the course, or you do it online, and it would whet your appetite to really dig into some of these other topics or some topics in depth. And then there's your starting point. You've got some good subject matter experts that you could start with. Where you go from there is going to be up to you, but at least get you off on the right track.
Right. Yeah. Well, Sam, thanks so much for joining me here and telling us a little bit about what you do and why you do it. And if you want to know more about Sam's regional seminars, and just go to the Thinking Matters website, thinkingmatters.org.nz, and it'll tell you the when and where's of these things. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast, because you don't want to miss future episodes where we'll explore interesting people and interesting topics. So hope to see you on our next podcast. God bless.
For more reasons why we believe,
or to support this ministry, go to
thinkingmatters.org.nz.